Hello, thank you for downloading this podcast of IPM from BBC Radio 4. I'm Luke Jones with Freddie Mayer.
Luke, Eddie.
Luke Mayer.
No, Luke, Eddie Mayer.
Luke, Eddie Mayer.
I miss Jen and Manveen.
Who?
But look, never mind that malarkey. Let's talk about something much more important. This week, we have the third and final part of our interview with a listener whose daughter has been addicted to heroin. You can hear the first two parts of the interview on the IPM podcast. We've heard so far how her daughter began using drugs, she lost a job, she ended up in court, and how her mother helped her buy heroin because she couldn't get methadone. Things were finally starting to look up. The question this week is, how is she now?
She's been doing really well. She's been clean for 3 weeks.
And when you say clean, what does that mean?
On a prescribed methadone programme, which means she has a set amount of methadone that she collects once a day in the morning from the chemist, swallows it in front of the chemist, then comes home. She doesn't have any of the withdrawal. She doesn't have the high. It doesn't make you feel good. It just stops that dreadful withdrawal that they have. And then she's functioning during the day. She's helping clean the house and cook the tea. And slowly over the next 3 to 6 months, she will take less and less each day with the aim of within 6 months being off methadone altogether.
And what do you think has brought her to this point?
Before we went to court, she had said to me, I've just had enough, this is awful. She'd had a couple of suicide attempts, one very serious one that resulted in liver damage. But you have to really show willing to be put on a methadone program. You don't just go in the door and say, I've had enough of being a heroin addict, I want to go on methadone. It doesn't work like that. You have to go for about 2 weeks worth of meetings at least, and you have to be attempting to come off heroin yourself before they'll even start you on a methadone program. And it's a real catch-22 situation, because she wanted to come off it by that point. She was hating her life. She was obviously extremely depressed because she was trying to take her own life, but in the same breath she couldn't get started on a methadone program. So I think the court ordering that to proceed forced the hand of local facilities available. They had to then start her on a methadone program sooner rather than later, and it forced her hand as well. She clearly had had enough, her body had had enough, she was becoming very thin and her teeth were getting bad and skin was bad, and she'd stolen off her sister, who was her, or is her, best friend. There was no positives in life.
And how have you been through all of this in terms of, I don't know, just being able to sleep, just being able to cope with your day-to-day life, looking after your two other children?
The last few years, there's been nights where I haven't been able to get to sleep until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It's very tempting to pour yourself a glass of wine, but then you're also very aware that then you're a hypocrite because you're relying on a crutch. The phone ringing at any time after 10 o'clock at night would just send me into an emotional panic. I just would think, well, this is it. This is the time. You live with that constant fear when you have a close family member who's an addict. You live with that constant fear that the next knock on the door or the next phone call will be the worst news you could ever ask for.
And if you, I mean, you've alluded to this, I suppose, when you talked in detail about the day coming out of court, about the help or the lack of it that you had. What suggestion would you make about the sort of help that people in your situation need?
Well, I think first and foremost, if a drug order is made by the court that you have to be able to access methadone there and then, that day, you have to be able to go to Turning Point, which is the drug help centre. You can't order someone who is a heroin addict to stop being a heroin addict and expect them to just walk out of the court and say, oh yeah, okay, I'm not a heroin addict anymore. Because it's not real life. I had to essentially break the law, or be part of breaking the law in a roundabout way, in order to survive those first couple of days. And that's wrong. Methadone isn't medication. It's not a drug that people use to get high. It's not fun. It's not anything. It's just a medication to stop you feeling ill when you're coming off heroin. but it's very hard to access.
And are you now, with your daughter, tentatively planning for the future in a way you couldn't have done?
Very tentatively, yeah.
What are your tentative hopes and dreams?
First and foremost, that she's happy. And I think that the only way that she'll be happy is when she's not using drugs. So that comes hand in hand with that. I think it's very, very important to take one day at a time, because it's taken 5 years to get to this point. She's now got her own accommodation, which is part of our house, but we've sort of made it so that she has her own access, and you know, we have to knock basically to get into her bit of the house. So this is her own home now, and set it up as her own home. She's got her dog back, which the dog's chuffed about, and she is. So it's small steps like that, remembering that you are loved and that you are missed when you are away for weeks and weeks using drugs. You know that there are people back at home who are still there waiting and wanting you to recover.
And what about you? You're in this tentatively, touch wood, fingers crossed, one day at a time, happier place. But what about everything that's been? How are you with all of that and all of that means to you?
Well, it's been a steep learning curve, definitely. I think I'm desperate to protect my two younger children from going down the same road. I'm trying very hard to be more open rather than just say, don't do this, don't do that. Yeah. It's the opposite. It's just look at what it does and trying to make them aware of the risks and things, but give them the freedom to do what teenagers want to do and young people want to do.
You may not have a time to think about this and it may not be important, but I just wonder how much you think about life had your daughter simply never taken drugs.
Yeah, all the time. Probably every day, I would say. How life could have been very different. How the thing that I think you don't realise when you don't have an addict in your family is how having an addict in your family infiltrates every single part of your being, your relationship, the way you bring up the children that are left, everything. Whether you worry about locking the front door when you go out or not, if you're only going out for 2 minutes down the road, it affects everything. And it does make you think what could have been.
And what do you imagine when you think what could have been?
Well, I know it's boastful, but she's absolutely beautiful looking and very intelligent. And I just think she could have been anything. She could have been anything. Perhaps not an artist. She's not very good at art, but she could have been anything else. She used to be, well, she still is, so massively into animals. And she used to talk about being a vet. But, you know, so years ago, I guess we used to dream about that, that we used to talk about when you're a vet one day. And it's so far away from the reality of what her adult life became that now the dream is very different. Now the dream is, I just want her to be drug-free and happy.
And do you feel pleased that as a mother, you've helped bring her to this stage?
I feel a split. I feel 50% responsible, because I think all mothers do. I think perhaps if I'd been there right at the start when there was obviously problems and done something different, I may have changed it. It depends. Some days I think I've done everything for the right reasons, even though she may not see it like that. And I'm glad I'm still here for her. And I'm proud that I'm still here and sane and standing. And I've kept all my strength that I had before. But then another day I get up and I think, this is all my fault. Perhaps if I hadn't kicked her out in those early few months when she refused to stop using drugs, perhaps if I'd kept her at home. So it's hard to know.
And how is trust between the two of you now?
Again, it's tentative, isn't it? It's a slow process of building. I trust her totally not to steal. I leave my handbag lying around. I don't worry about it. I don't think she's going to steal from me. And I don't entirely trust her in not contacting the wrong people, because it's a slow process I'm trying to trust. And initially, the first couple of days she was back, I'm sure she didn't trust me. I'm sure she knew that I was going in her room and just having a look around and checking there wasn't any drug paraphernalia or anything there, because that's what you start doing as a parent. You start searching out the equipment and the stuff that they're using. But I've stopped doing that now. So I suppose the trust must be building. You know, she's starting to trust us not to snoop around, and we're starting to trust her so we don't have to snoop around. It's that sort of slow, gradual, each day a little bit more and a little bit more.
When was the last time you had a really good laugh?
About an hour ago.
Oh, what made you laugh?
Oh, she did. She's funny. That's the trouble. She's too fun. It makes it hard to be cross for any length of time. So we still laugh. I've got good friends and good family. You know, we still laugh.
An IPM listener on her daughter's ongoing recovery from a drug addiction. Next week, we're going to hear from Turning Point. They provide drug rehabilitation services on behalf of the NHS. And of course, your experience is welcome, whether you have a drug problem yourself or someone you know does. IPM@bbc.co.uk is how you get in touch.
There are details of organisations which can offer advice and support on drug addiction at bbc.co.uk/actionline. You can telephone the BBC Action Line to hear recorded information on 0800 155 947. Lines are open 24 hours a day. Calls are free from landlines and mobiles.
Now, the news bulletin that's all about our listeners. Your news with, from BBC Radio 2, Ken Bruce.
I just found out my boss and head of department is a lesbian. I know it shouldn't matter, but as a young gay woman, it's made my week. In less than 12 weeks, I'm going to be living independently for the first time in 15 years. I'm excited and scared. 8 lovely little ball of fluff, long-tailed tits have arrived just in time for the big garden birdwatch. I'm 84 years old, but the voice in my head still says the same silly sort of things that it did when I was a teenager. I sent a supportive letter to an old girlfriend in an abusive relationship last week. The postman brought an unexpected reply from her this morning. Grateful for my support, I feel less worried for her now. When buying a toiletry, we find that our choice is between items made in Russia or USA. Surprising and difficult, as we now boycott products from both of these countries. My older sister's getting married on Saturday, 21st January, in Canada. She's 75 and her fiancé is 91. A very happy, hopeful day. One of our 27-year-old sons, both of whom have autism and severe learning difficulties, has been significantly more aggressive of late, leaving us feeling bewildered and utterly dispirited. I was weeding this week and discovered the remaining lost Easter egg from last year's egg hunt. At the age of 49, released from the demands of children, I have finally fulfilled a small ambition and taken up crocheting. I was thinking I wanted a night out with my husband, but I hadn't meant a Friday night in A&E. At 70 years of age, I finally realised my dream and swam a mile at my local pool. Not bad for this old gal. For the first time since I became a university teacher in 1972, yesterday afternoon, a cat joined the audience for my undergraduate lecture. And as for me, I had my 66th birthday this week. I'm hoping the BBC's policy on ageism hasn't changed.
Ken Bruce.
IPM@bbc.co.uk is how you can send us your sentence or an email on any topic. And we're on Twitter, BBC IPM. Well, that was the programme.
That was the programme.
And we should say, shouldn't we, that we've gathered together all of the three parts of the interview we just heard the last part of into one special podcast.